us from outside and are followed by the unmistakable splashing of water. "Skinny dipping!" Kylie yells, and in the background rises a chorus of male cheers. Carter is still looking at my mouth.
"Hi."
"Hi." His smile droops.
"I have 2 full-size beds in my room."
My eyes shine. My smile goes wide. "Well, that's just fine because I have a king." We trip through the doorway, laughing and breathless over having raced into the gift shop for condoms and throwing way too much money at the bewildered teenager working the night shift. I feel like I'm full of tiny bubbles or brilliant stars. Inside, everything is alive. Somehow, despite how many months it's been and all the games we've played between us, awkwardness never descends. It's us, alone, smiling into kisses, pulling off clothes with the comfort of a couple long together and the excitement of 2 virgins. I swear his body is unreal, and I can't stop touching it, memorizing it like my hands are scanning it into some memory database. I give my brain permission to overwrite anything at once. Take away my ability to ride a bike or crochet. The planes and dips of Carter's abdomen are way more important.
"Is this too fast?"
he asks, barely pausing as he flings my bra behind him somewhere. I laugh. "Hell no." He leads us both farther into the room, and then I'm lying down. The sheets cool along the back of my body, and Carter pressed along the front. He kisses a path down my neck.
"Can we be friends now?"
The feel of his lips against my skin makes it hard to form words, but I swallow and do my best to focus.
"Is that what you want?"
I ask, a question that might be taken more seriously if his belt weren't hanging open, the metal buckle clinking in the space between us. "Friends?"
"Yes,"
he says, teeth scraping along my collarbone.
"And no?"
He pulls back to look at me.
"Does that make sense?"
"I think so." I finish unbuttoning his pants and push the fabric down his hips, smiling when the cold air leaves a trail of goosebumps across his skin. He kicks them the rest of the way off, and then it's naked legs against naked legs, bare torso against bare torso. He says something else, but the shape of his words is lost against my shoulder and then my breast as he moves lower. I arch my back when he takes my nipple into his mouth, and the sound I make surprises me. Fuck. Why did we waste so much time? I have the brief thought that we need to be quiet, that eventually Rose will be only 2 doors down, or someone we know might be in the room right next door. But I can't even hear the shrieks of the skinny dippers anymore, and the lake is right there. We're in a fortress. Carter's mouth is everywhere. He worships my breasts, sucking each nipple in turn while rolling the other between his fingers. His eyes are wild as he looks up my body, holding my gaze as he moves lower and lower still, pulling off my panties and finally settling between my legs. He leans forward, tentative at first and then greedy, like I'm the sweetest thing he's ever tasted. I feel his breath and his sounds, and he presses each into my skin, and I want him to push them deeper so that I feel them vibrating up my spine, radiating out along my ribs. I feel empty. I might actually say this out loud because his fingers come alongside his kisses, and then deep into me. The world outside seems to stop. The idea of a retreat going on out there feels almost comically surreal. Everything collapses down to the insistent press of his tongue. Heat curls like ribbons around my spine, and I pull his hair, arch my body into his touch, and try to tell him that I'm close, so, so close. "Carter!" I gasp, grabbing at him again, and, oh God, I'm coming. Coming so loud, and fuck! I no longer understand why we ever left this place. No job is worth losing this. There's a flash of cool air against my skin, And then Carter is there, kissing me like I'm oxygen. His lips taste of me, and impossibly it makes me want him more. He reaches for the box on the bedside table, fumbling and opening it blindly while he kisses me with his eyes sweetly closed. I can't close my eyes for even a second, though. I'm unwilling to miss the details I know I'll play over and over inside my head tomorrow. The curve of his shoulder, the way his arm flexes as he reaches between us, rolling the condom on before lining himself up against me. Relief wipes his face blank for a heartbeat as he presses inside. But then my mind is erased. I can't think of a single thing except the feel of him moving forward. I would be hard-pressed to remember my own name. I look up at him, focusing on his neck and his throat, where his head is tipped back, how his Adam's apple moves when he swallows. He covers me completely, elbows planted above my shoulders as he looks between us, mouth open and breath escaping in sharp little stabs. He moves and he moves, fingers of one hand sliding down, biting into my hips, torso stretched above me as he pushes himself harder and faster, and fuck, it's so good. I wonder if I could keep him right here all weekend. Our bodies slide together, skin damp with sweat and already flushed from exertion. My muscles tense and release, my leg slipping from his hip, and he reaches for the back of my knee, almost bending me in half with the force he uses to press back inside my body. I don't recognize my own voice as it comes out sharp and surprised, bouncing back to us in the quiet room. The sound makes him harder, makes him wilder and frantic, and when I finally melt beneath him, pleasure so strong it takes me by surprise, drawing my legs open, my knees alongside his ribs. He grows fevered, hips and arms working, hands pulling me up onto him, pushing himself deep. I cling to him, panting hot into his shoulder as he says my name and yes and please, and then we're coming, both of us together, barely able to catch our breath. I wonder if I'll ever catch my breath again. With his face pressed to my neck, Carter groans in his relief, back shaking beneath my hands. He tries to move and hisses before bringing his mouth to the shell of my ear. Holy shit. I make some garbled sound of agreement, unable to complete the connection between my brain and words.
I think I just found religion.
I giggle. I don't want him to move an inch. My legs come around his, twisting and twining, and he indulges me in breathless kisses delivered through smiles. My legs are smooth. His are covered in soft hair, and the sensation of them sliding together, the heat of him, heavy and already hard again between our bodies, rekindles something inside me, triggering a desperate need for more. When he pulls back, just barely, his eyes seem nearly backlit.
Be right back.
Don't go. He laughs, kissing the tip of my nose.
I should get rid of this.
Oh. Condom. With a tiny groan of protest, I let him pull back and climb from the bed. He pads across the room. He is a study in shadow and geometry. Straight lines frame the muscle along his spine, triangular planes at his shoulders, the hard curve of his backside. I watch his shoulders as he works with his back to me, grabs a tissue from a box on the dresser, and drops the trash into the bin. In the dim light, I see the way he hesitates, taking a deep breath. Carter straightens and turns. The front of my body is cold with the loss of him over me, and it's compounded by the tremor of anxiety that he'll step away, clear his head, come to his senses.
Are you sore?
If anything, I feel hungrier. My voice is hoarse.
No?
He squints, seeming to study me from across the room.
Are you freaking out?
It still feels like I can't catch my breath. and it hits me in this bewildering burst what we've just done and how much I want him back in bed with me.
Not in the way you mean.
He takes one step closer and stops, looking down at me.
Are you freaking out?
I ask.
A little.
He reaches up, scratches the back of his neck while my stomach dissolves away inside my body. But then he adds,
I need to...
More hesitation. My lungs are incinerated.
I've thought about this a lot,
he says.
About you. I'm in love with you, Evie. You're finally here with me. I don't want to sleep.
I sit up, aware that he can see me better with the moonlight coming in the window behind him. The sheet falls away and I climb onto my knees. I hear his breath catch somewhere high in his throat, but I don't have to tell him to come back to bed, that it's okay, that we're a done deal. He closes the distance between us, smooth skin sliding over mine as he pulls me down, pulls me under again.
Chapter 22. Carter. I wake to scratchy sheets, an unfamiliar ceiling, and the kind of artificial darkness that only comes from heavy curtains. There's movement at my side, and for one horror-filled moment I remember Kylie, with her overglossed lips and no concept of personal space, and my heart nearly stops, starting again only when I see Evie sleeping next to me. An electric shock rolls through my body when I think of how we got here, how kissing felt like drowning and never wanting to come back up. Evie looks soft like this. Maybe soft isn't exactly the right word, but there's a stillness I've not seen in her before, like her walls are down and I could touch her skin and move straight past it to her bones. She's so close, we're almost nose to nose, and I can make out every eyelash, count each tiny freckle. She's also naked, which I'm pretty happy about, but then I worry how she'll react when she wakes up and sees that I'm naked too. Are we still friends today? Did she hear me say that I was in love with her? A part of me wants to be more scared than I am. It would be easier if we came to our senses and chalked this up to a good time and crazy lapse in judgment. But my brain and body are a united front on this in love with Evie thing. The sheet is low on her back. Her dark hair is tangled across the pillow. I think we had sex 4 times last night. I stretch my legs, clench my stomach. It feels like we had sex 20 times last night. I reach out and run a finger over the hand tucked under her chin and up the length of her arm. She starts to stir. I suddenly realize I have no idea what I'm going to say and close my eyes, steadying my breath so she thinks I'm still asleep. A few moments of silence pass before curiosity gets the best of me. I feel ridiculous. I'm a grown man pretending to sleep to avoid a grown-up conversation. A smile begins to tug at my mouth and I chance a peek, both of us bursting into laughter when we find the other doing the same thing. With a hand on my face, she pushes me away. You're an idiot. Warmth pools in my chest. I'm the idiot? Have you seen your hair? I reach out to smooth it down and she laughs, trying to escape. Have you seen yours? She asks with a grin. I pause, serious for a moment. Still freaking out? She plays with her lip and hesitates before answering. A little. Are you? I tell her the truth. A little. Do you want to stop this, whatever this is? I lean forward and press a kiss to the corner of her mouth before meeting her eyes. No. Okay, she says, her gaze falling to my lips. Do you want to avoid discussing it and have sex again? I move until I'm hovering over her, marveling at how much of her body I can cover with mine. I look down between us, to where her legs bracket my hips. I rock forward, experimentally, and feel the way I easily slip across her skin, smooth and already wet. She groans softly, and I know that sound. I remember the way it echoed around the room. Her hands move along my sides, nails dragging up my ribs and across my nipples to my shoulders. With a hand on the back of my neck, she pulls me down, and then there's nothing between us at all. Not even air. For a moment, I think we could come from this, two bodies moving against each other at just the right speed, in just the right spot, like we did that night in her apartment. But that's not what I want. Evie must be on the same page because her arm is already stretched to the side, fingers fumbling with the strip of gift shop condoms I tossed there at some point during the night. My eyes nearly cross when she rolls the latex over me, and I give her a reproachful look, batting her hand away. There's no waiting after that. The sheet comes up, and over our heads, a tent of white. My heart is racing, and she rolls us over to straddle my hips, taking me inside and moving in tiny little starts and stops until she figures it out, gets where she really needs to be. Her palms press into my chest as she shifts forward and back, over and over, and it feels so good I put my hands on her hips to distract myself, line up my thumbs with the gentle contours of her navel. I thrust up and into her, harder and then harder still, and her mouth falls open, the headboard tapping near the wall, the springs creaking beneath us. Her eyes are closed, mouth partially open, and I wonder why we waited so fucking long for this. How we managed to let everything else get in the way because this... Fuck, nothing compares to this. She rolls her hips again, a tight little circle, and swears, her fingers moving between her legs in a practiced motion. "You gonna fuck me?" I ask her in a whisper, mouth watering at the way her nipples harden further. Her response is wordless, a soft little gasp that gets lost against my own sounds when she comes down harder, takes more of me inside. All I can do is watch her, nodding in time with her movements and feeling the muscles in my stomach tighten, the pressure build. Her hair is damp against her forehead and where it curls along the curve of her breast, and I think she's almost there too, her movements getting choppy. Rhythm frantic. "Yeah," I say, placing my fingers next to hers and circling. "That," she starts to say back, when there's a pounding at her door, followed by a frantic scratching. Our eyes meet, bodies immediately frozen, neither of us breathing. "Oh my God, did I deadbolt the door last night?" she whisper hisses. "Housekeeping could..." But it's not housekeeping. It's about a million times worse, because following another knock and some more scratching is Brad's voice. Brad, our boss, on the other side of the door. "Evie?" he calls and knocks again. I've never moved so fast in my life. It's a flurry of arms and legs, sheets and pillows. Evie jumps into a t-shirt and a pair of sweats at a speed that couldn't possibly be human. Meanwhile, I'm naked, wearing a condom, and still pretty hard when she starts herding me in the direction of the closet. "One second," she calls and then whispers, "I'll get rid of him. Stay in here and don't move." Her face is flushed, cheeks rosy with a light sheen of sweat, and there's no way he won't know what she's been doing. I hold my hand up to object and she closes the door, shutting me inside. Shit. I can't see anything but a strip of light down the center, and okay, that's mildly terrifying, but I'm an optimist, so I'm going to see it less as this is where Brad could see me standing naked and still wearing a condom, and more as this is where all the oxygen is coming in. They say that when one sense is taken away, all the rest of them are heightened. It must be true, because not only can I smell Evie's perfume when she sprays it lightly in the room, good call, by the way, but I can hear her footsteps as she crosses to the door, then the sound of the lock disengaging, and can almost sense the moment that Brad is there, less than 4 feet from where I'm hiding. "Brad, hi." Evie clears her throat. "Sorry, I was just getting dressed. It's..." There's a pause, and I imagine her checking her watch and giving him her best passive-aggressive smile. "Wow, it's not even 7. What can I do for you?" There's some sort of scuffle, and then Brad is yelling, "Bear, get back out here!" "You brought your dog?" Evie says, and I stifle a groan. Brad has a Great Dane that is basically the size of a horse, and if he's managed to escape from Brad and into the room, who knows what he'll find, namely, me. I'm briefly overwhelmed with the mental image of him easily barreling through these cheap veneer doors and dragging my naked ass out into the room. "Maxine drove him up last night. Bear!" he yells again, but it sounds half-assed at best. "He'll be fine," he says more quietly to Evie, just sniffing around. Now, I wanted to ask you about the schedule today. What have you planned? I can vaguely hear Evie rattling off the itinerary, and while I want to be furious at the way he's talking to her, there's a more pressing matter. Bear has obviously figured out that something about this closet isn't on the up and up, and he's sniffing around, his nose and dark eyes clogging up my oxygen crack. I'm silently trying to will Bear away when he finds something more interesting and wanders off. Without the cloud of dog breath and the sounds of his panting echoing around the closet, I can finally make out parts of the conversation again. And I guess I'm really not sure why you're asking me, Evie is saying. The event planner put most of the schedule together. We just okayed it and picked between the steak and the fish. I have to be honest. A pause. Brad, what is he doing? He's in the trash. Bear, get out of there! Brad shouts and claps his hands. What are you eating? By the tinkling of his collar, I think Bear has run back to Brad, and he continues. I also wanted to talk to you about your assistant, he says. Jess? Why are you having her email Kylie about the vendors? Kylie doesn't have time for things like that, and frankly, neither do you. I was having her verify some of the... You seem to forget I'm the coach, and I set the plays. Send all the invoices and receipts to Kylie to handle where I'm assuming they were headed in the first place. I put you in charge of this event, and that's what you should be worrying about. Not... Carter, she interrupts, and I stop breathing. Whatever flagging erection I still had is no longer an issue. You put me and Carter in charge of this event, and yet I'm the only one you seem to be holding accountable, and you do realize none of this is anywhere in my job description. There's a long pause, and I'm afraid to move, afraid to blink, wondering whether my hammering pulse is actually audible outside the closet. Did you not hear anything I said last night, Evie? Brad says, voice cool. About working together? About us all coming together as a team? I heard every word. Then maybe you should do yourself a favor and think on what that means. You don't have another strike left. What have any of my strikes been? She asks, patience clearly thin. Field Day was 2 years ago now, and there were about 15 producers also on the hook. I brought in more money than any other agent this year, male or female. Playing the girl card, I see, he says. You know how I feel about that. He lets the sentence hang there, and a few moments later I hear a snap, the sound of a dog running past, and then the door closing, the chain sliding into place. Evie throws open the closet, and a blast of fresh, cold air rushes into my face. Thank God, I say, my hand pressed to my chest as I attempt to slow my heart. What the hell was that all about? What is his problem? Her jaw is tight as she looks past me, staring at the closed door. I'll tell you, for a moment I blacked out and fantasized about pushing him off the balcony. Just a little shove and he would bounce like a tennis ball. Wow, I straighten. I don't know what it says about me, but I am more than a little into your evil side. He is the worst, she whispers, the worst. Walking toward the bed, she grabs a pillow and hurls it at the wall. Lucky for both of us, we weren't anywhere near it, she says. I carry way too much guilt to be a very good killer. I mean, technically it would be gravity that killed him, so you'd just have to be a relatively good pusher. She throws another pillow. Why did he come to my room? Did he go to yours first? I sigh. I suspect we both know the answer to that. I promise I would have said something if I hadn't been naked, and I motion to where the condom has probably permanently dried to my dick. She winces, and I slip into the bathroom, taking a moment to clean myself up. Of course he let his horse dog in to destroy my hotel room, she says from the bedroom. Next he'll want me to... She goes silent, then lets out a horrified... Oh my God! I lean out of the bathroom, looking across the room to where Evie is staring wide-eyed at something on the floor. What's wrong? She looks up at me. How many times did we have sex last night? Ah, there it is, I laugh, giving her a winning smile. Just sinking in for you now that you slept with the enemy? No, she says, pointing down. Bear got into the trash over here. I'm trying to figure out how many condoms he ate. Are we dog killers? I mean, I'm pretty sure we're not. I googled it, and if Morgan can swallow a souvenir pressed penny the size of her entire windpipe and have it come out the other end just fine, Bear will be okay too. I think. Evie is slightly less convinced and makes me clear my browser history so that if something goes awry, it can't be used against us as evidence. I have some time until our first team-building activity, and I go to my room to shower before pulling out my laptop to check email. There's one from the creative director from the Vanity Fair shoot, and I'm initially afraid to open it. I needn't be, because despite Jonah's diva entrance and Evie and I nearly losing our minds being idiots to each other before groping in the dark mixing room, the photos are great. So great, in fact, that they want to book Jonah for another shoot. My brother might be a giant asshat half of the time, but he clearly has the talent to back it up. It's still early, but I take a chance and call him. He picks up after four rings. I hear the sound of a lawnmower somewhere in the distance, so I assume he must be up and outside. A good sign. Listen, I say, buzzing with genuine excitement. Have you checked your email? There are proofs from Vanity Fair, and they look great. Also, they want you to do another job. Nothing but silence greets me on the other end of the line. I pull the phone away to make sure it hasn't disconnected. Did you hear me, Jonas? They want you back. I saw, he says, but falls quiet again. You saw? That's it? Dude, this is exactly what we wanted, what you wanted, to work, to continue to live in the lifestyle to which you have so richly become accustomed. I'm just not sure that's what I want, he says, doing feature shoots. I gape for a few breaths, staring unseeing at the wall of my hotel room. But isn't that the way you pay back your bills? Yeah, but I went to this gallery the other day, run by a friend of a friend, and some of the stuff was pretty good. Not fashion or anything, but like abstracts and portraits. You're saying you want to go back to the kind of work you did in school? I ask, confused. Wasn't the reason Jonah came out to Hollywood in the first place to be a star? I can't help but see doing small art shows as a step down on the particular ladder he chose. Do you remember the photo that won me the scholarship? He asks. And I know exactly which one he means because it still hangs in our parents' house. The power lines, I say. That's what you want to do? A little here and there. Like if I could do a few shoots to pay the bills, but the other stuff on the side. Maybe get a show or something. I sit back in my chair. This has to be the most un-LA thing my brother has said since he was 18. What do you think? He presses. I come back to the conversation and realize I still haven't said anything. Yeah, Jones. If you think that's what will make you happy, then you should totally do it. And if you can do both and still make some money, well, that's even better. I guess what I'm saying is that you have that option with Vanity Fair. Yeah, you'll figure it out. My phone clicks and I look down at the screen. Caleb, Dan's manager. Listen, Jonah, I have another call and it's sort of important. Can I call you back? No worries. I think he's going to hang up, but he speaks again. Oh, and Carter? He pauses. Thanks. And he's gone. I don't have time to reflect on this newfound vulnerability displayed by my douche nozzle brother, so I switch over and stand to pace the room. Caleb, hi.
Hey, he says. I have Dan here. You free?
Absolutely. There's some shuffling as the phone is passed around, and then Dan is there.
Carter, finally we connect.
Dan, how's it going, man?
Good. Just finished reading a script and it's terrible, he laughs. They're all pretty terrible, if I'm being honest.
I think of the last thing I saw Dan in, a giant action movie that takes place on a tanker stranded at sea. Before that, he played a cop trying to bring down a band of drug dealers, and wonder if the scripts he's being sent are all just carbon copies of what he's already done. I jot down a note to find out.
What is it exactly you're looking for?
I ask, mentally filing through the stack of great scripts Brad recently sent me.
What I'm looking for is an agent who sees what I am, but also what I can be. Jared Leto won an Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club, but he also gets to play the Joker.
He gets to be a rock star, too, I say, and Dan laughs at this. Pretty sweet gig if you can get it.
Exactly, he agrees. Nobody's telling him he can't pull off the Joker. He wanted it, and he just did it.
He's also got the talent to back it up, I say, leading him.
You think I don't?
I wouldn't be having this conversation if I thought that, I tell him. At least as an actor. I have to be honest, though, Dan. You'd be a shit rock star. He laughs again.
That's what I need. An agent who gets me the parts I need, but also the parts I want. And one who steers me away from the things that won't work. It doesn't help anyone for me to kiss your ass, I tell him. Neither of us gets paid that way. You think you're that guy? I'm positive I'm that guy. You're a career, not just a role. Let's do this then, he says. I need to get back on set, but Caleb can take care of the details. Let's make some movies, man! And win some awards, I say in response, and can hear his quiet, hell yeah, as he passes the phone to Caleb. I finish up the call, and when I hang up, I'm not quite sure if I imagined the whole thing. There's some official stuff to be done, but I'm Dan Prince's new agent. Me. I push my hands into my hair and pace the room again before moving to pick up my phone, ready to call Evie with the good news when I stop, dropping it back to the bed. There is absolutely no way I can tell Evie this today. She thinks Brad is trying to push her out, and after hearing their little altercation this morning, I agree. Not only did I pick up Dan from her in a semi-shady way, but I'm confident I can do things for him precisely because I have access to a stack of hot scripts that Evie never got to read. I pick up my phone again, feeling the weight of it in my palm and wondering if there's some sort of 24-hour grace period I get on delivering a possibly devastating blow to my new girlfriend's career. I open the calendar app and send Justin a note to block out an hour on Tuesday after I've had a chance to confirm the details with Dan. Best not to rush it. I'll finish out the weekend, get us back to L.A., and then talk to Evie about it as soon as possible. There's basically one goal for any team-building weekend. Make a bunch of grown, moderately successful adults behave like idiots for a 48-hour period, all in the name of corporate bonding. This weekend is no different. It's not that the games themselves are silly. They're actually a lot of fun. It's just hard to immediately spot the real-world utility. I mean, how can fighting off a zombie in a locked conference room ever help me tell my coworker in a calm and rational manner that I'm upset he ate my lunch? Aptly, the first game is called Zombie Escape. A zombie is tethered to the center of the room and gradually given more floor space. The other team members are meant to solve various puzzles before the zombie is freed entirely. The best moment in this particular game comes when Evie's team sacrifices Ashton to get another 3 minutes. The event planner, Libby, gives them kudos for real-world problem-solving, but reminds them it wasn't exactly in the spirit of the game. But let me be clear. I would have done the same thing if the situation were real. Ashton is an ass. Next up is office trivia. We're divided into new teams and earn points by answering questions correctly. The questions start out easy enough and are meant to test our observation and recollection skills. On what floor is the shared bathroom? What color is the couch in Evie's office? See? Simple. But when the exercise devolves into a scene right out of Cards Against Humanity, with questions like, what most accurately fits the description of an hour of fun, perfect for lunch breaks? And half the group shouts, Rose. It's time to pack it in. The correct answer was break room yoga, by the way. It's hard to keep from watching Evie during all this, making my way over to her team and coming up with excuses to touch her. By the time lunch is over and everyone meets for a nature walk around the lake, if you'd dusted Evie from my fingerprints, she'd have looked like a powdered donut. The temperature is just above freezing, and we good little Californians pile on our bots specifically for this trip, winter clothing, and start the walk. I run to catch up with my girl. My girl. And then tug on her hand so we're both lingering at the back of the group. Evie's cheeks are pink from the cold, and I move in as close as I can without looking like I'm up to something. What's this all about? She says, grinning as she watches the distance between us and the others grow. I slip one hand out of my pocket and twist my pinky around hers. Just want to hold your hand. You're such a puppy, she says, but she squeezes my finger anyway. Speaking of puppies, Bear runs around, ducking and dodging through the group as we walk along the lake. At one point, he gingerly steps into the shallows and begins crouching. Oh, God, I murmur, gently elbowing Evie. She turns to follow my attention and lets out a quiet gasp. His back legs shake. His spine is awkwardly curved. And if I had to guess, I would say Bear is feeling some intestinal distress. Bear! Brad yells, and everyone looks awkwardly away from the pooping dog. What in the hell are you doing? Get out of that water, it's freezing! Bear will not be moved. He carefully steps a little farther in, crouches a little more, whines, and looks back at us all. Evie glances up at me, and then we both turn to watch in horror as Brad continues to yell and Bear continues to, well, bear down. Everyone is standing at the water's edge, and it's like a slow-motion car accident. Nobody can seem to look away. I let go of Evie's hand and make my way to the front of the group, on the verge of confessing and suggesting we run Bear to the nearest emergency vet, when the problem seems to solve itself. Bear barks happily and straightens, bounding back into the snow. "Well, that was anticlimactic," Kylie says. "I thought he was having puppies or something." Every head in the group turns to look at her with the same confused expression when someone speaks up. "Oh my God, Brad," Rose says. "I think Bear has worms." We all look, because honestly, at this point, what else can we do? Four pale yellow things are floating at the very surface of the water. And I wince, turning toward Evie just in time to hear someone say, Are those condoms? It is safe to say that I have never been more excited for a trip to end than I am right now. The retreat itself was fine. Great if you count it was 2 nights and 8 condoms. Only 7 of those used to completion. But to say I was distracted would be a gross understatement. This weekend has felt like some kind of test. But aside from the condom incident, as we've decided to call it, and Brad and Evie's little altercation in her room, it feels like an overwhelming success. Everyone is packed and having a final cup of coffee Sunday morning before the cars arrive to drive us back. The fire is roaring, a row of suitcases waits in a neat line near the doorway, and I'm counting down the minutes until Evie and I are alone again. I want to be alone so I can tell her about Dan, yes, but also to talk over and digest everything that's happened between us, and to make a plan for how to deal with Brad together. Evie is on the phone with the drivers, and I'm near the fireplace watching her as inconspicuously as I can manage. Brad and Kylie are talking in a corner nearby. I can hear bits and pieces of their conversation. Not that I'm really paying attention, I'm just ready to get out of here. "I don't know," Kylie says. "I told them specifically that all of that was supposed to go straight to you." Brad nods. "I'm not sure where the miscommunication happened. I told them, Brad." "I know you did," he says, and there's softness in his tone that suddenly has my attention. "People have too much time on their hands. I'll take care of it." I don't realize that I'm staring until Brad looks over Kylie's shoulder and his eyes lock with mine. Shit. He sends Kylie away, telling her to make sure everyone is accounted for, and moves to stand at my side. "Carter," he says, eyebrows pulled in tight as he glances around the rest of the bar. "You weren't here last year, but do you think the retreat was a success?" "Absolutely," I tell him. "Evie deserves every bit of the credit." He leans against the fireplace and reaches for a few mints in a bowl there before popping one into his mouth. "You don't have to cover for her, you know. If she wasn't pulling her weight," he says, "you can tell me." He places an encouraging hand on my shoulder. "I know that you like her, Carter, and I do too. Evie is a great girl. But she also has a reputation in this business." "You mean field day?" "Exactly. And I'd hate to see you get caught up in anything that could jeopardize your trajectory. Especially considering I'd like to talk sometime this week about renewing your contract." I straighten and take a step back. "With all due respect, Evie is one of the..." I'm cut off by a round of cheers and applause inside the lobby. The cars have arrived, and a smiling Evie is now walking toward us. "Time to go," she says, smile faltering as she looks between us. "Everything okay over here?" Brad smiles that fucking smile of his. "We were just talking about how the weekend went." "Yeah, I think it was pretty great." She gives us both a sweetly proud grin. "It was amazing," I say. "I was just telling Brad here that I know we did this together, but you really impressed me, leading this with everything else on your plate." Her face lights up. "Thank you." She looks from me to Brad for some kind of confirmation. Of course it doesn't come. "Looks like it's time to head out," he says flatly. "I'll see you both tomorrow morning. Enjoy the rest of your day." Evie's face falls, and I know that her fears were just confirmed. For whatever reason, Brad was hoping she would screw up. Suddenly it occurs to me that it isn't just about Evie being a woman or any 100 other possible forms of bigotry. I mean, it is partly that. Evie's not crazy regarding all the double standards. But Brad isn't trying to get rid of every woman in the firm, even if he treats them all like shit. So his grudge isn't just that. No. Evie has something on Brad. The question I have, when I look over at her, is whether she even realizes it.
Chapter 23. Evie. I consider myself to be an especially intuitive person, but even a newborn would pick up on the tension between me and Brad. Monday morning check-in goes by without a single word about the retreat. Brad doesn't even acknowledge me in the hallway as we pass, and Kylie's sweet, "I still really like you," smiles every time she sees me, communicate more than Brad's stony silence. It's not unheard of to have tense relationships at work, even, maybe especially, with bosses. But given that I've done everything he's asked of me and then some, his behavior is bewildering. As much as I love being an agent, and as much as I love having the reach of P&D and its resources at my fingertips, I have to admit that it's getting hard to give a shit about any of this. Carter and I banged all of Friday and Saturday night, Saturday morning, of course, and back at my place the rest of the weekend on Sunday. That's pretty much all I can think about right now. Being sex drunk is certainly better than being work stressed, and I'm like a cartoon with a halo of spinning stars. But instead of being hit with an anvil over the head, I've been hit in the vagina with Carter's magical penis. On Tuesday morning, Rose announces that she's leaving the business, moving back to Iowa, and opening a bookstore. Pretty much everyone's reaction to this is an internal, drawn-out, okay, which is less because doing so is a complete 180 from her job now, and more because none of us could have guessed that Rose reads books. Like, ever. She announces this in the middle of the wide outer hallway in front of about 16 assistants and interns working at the common area. It's followed by a chorus of simultaneous gasps. The interns love Rose because she tells them every bit of dirt she knows. Rose presses a shaking hand to her chest.
"I know," she says. "It hurts me, too. I'll miss you guys so much."
From across the hall, I can sense Carter's attention on my face. Our eyes snag and we struggle to not break out into enormous grins. This means one less agent in L.A. This means Brad could possibly keep us both. I break my gaze from his when my phone buzzes in my palm with a call from a producer at Sony. I answer, turning and speedwalking to my office.
"Evie," the voice says. "It's Frank Nelson."
"Frank, nice to hear from you."
"Look, I'm on my way to a meeting, but wanted to check in quickly. I have a script I'd really like you to consider for Trent Vaughn. This one is a huge Michael Bay production, and we've already got Keira Knightley signed on. Trent's our lead if he wants it."
My heart isn't galloping. It's swallowing itself whole with every clenching beat.
"I'd love to take a look,"
I say as calmly as I can. "Send it on over with the offer details, and we'll go from there."
"Great."
The call ends. Easy, fast, timely, life-altering.
"Come in,"
Brad says from the other side of the heavy oak door. I push in, hands still shaking. He looks up, unblinking.
"Evie?"
"I've got great news," I tell him. He bids me to continue by putting his glasses down and folding his hands in front of him. "Frank Nelson just called and offered Trent the lead on the next Bay film." Brad's reaction to this is a tiny flicker of an eyebrow, a twitch at the side of his mouth. 6 months ago, he would have rounded the desk and hugged me over this. But now, all I get is a,
"Good."
"Good." "He's sending over the script and the offer today." Brad nods and finally offers a tiny flash of a smile.
"That's good."
He inhales sharply, leaning back in his chair to study me.
"Did you tell Carter?"
My brain comes to a halt, and I know my face has just been wiped clean of any expression. Instinct makes me continue with caution. Did he ask me this because he knows I'm sleeping with Carter, or did he ask me this because Trent will soon be Carter's and I'll be packing my bags? I came to tell you first, I say. I'll tell him whenever I see him. Brad smiles.
He's looking at some big deals, too, coming up. Did he tell you? He landed Dan Prince on Saturday.
I am Alice, tumbling through the looking glass. I am Louise, driving the car over the cliff.
He did? He did? He did?
Why didn't he tell me? I wanted this for him. My face feels hot. God, I must be bright red. I need to get the fuck out of here.
Brad puts his glasses on, and his smile is genuine this time.
Go congratulate him. It's a great signing for us.
I have about 7,000 reactions to this, and they're all happening in my body at once. Confusion, surprise, anger, sadness, worry, guilt, happiness, and whatever the other several thousand are, I feel them. Each one. Locking myself in a bathroom stall, I sit down and put my head in my hands. Think, Evie. Work through it all. Why didn't he tell me? I know why. This situation is complicated, and our relationship is only a few days out of cutthroat situation and into all the sex. Is Carter really that guy? Am I so emotion blind that I can't even see when he's collecting a few fucks before taking my job? My brain screams and I press my fists to my temples. I know going to sexist asshat town is my knee-jerk reaction. The sad thing is that I'm right most of the time, but this is Carter. I've seen him at his best and his worst. I know him. Don't I? I squeeze my eyes closed, forcing my internal debate team to step up to the podium. Would I have told him? Maybe, but likely no. I would want to see that signature page first. I would want to know for sure that Dan Prince was mine, because it doesn't matter how many Michael Bay movies Trent gets, Dan Prince is the future. He's the next Brad Pitt, the next Clooney. He's not a small star, he's a son. What does this mean for me? With Rose out of the picture, who knows, but it likely means that I'm second to the Golden Boy, and that Golden Boy is my boyfriend. Am I okay with that? Carter isn't in his office when I come out of my panic room, and so I pace my own office, replying to emails as my brain takes tiny breaths of air. It's only noon, and I know I have a to-do list a mile long, but I can't for the life of me remember anything on it. I call Jess in, tell her to go through and prioritize my monstrous call sheet, and focus on that for as long as I can. Work is grounding. It's the sharpening of a knife, the trimming of a hedge. Everything feels orderly once I've passed the ball into someone else's court. Jess leans against my doorframe.
Did you have a chance to go over those retreat invoices again?
I wince. Damn it. It's on my list to do today. Thank you for Carter's shoes squeak on the marble when he steps off the elevator, and I am up, out of my chair, and sprinting. Jess's laughter follows me down the hall. I jog over to him, clutching his arm in my hands.
Carter.
Hey, crazy eyes,
he says, laughing. But then his expression straightens like he knows I know, and he lifts his chin for us to head back in the direction of his office. He closes the door behind him.
Evie.
I just talked to Brad, I say breathlessly. Trent was offered a role in the next Bay production, and he told me about Dan, and...
I was going to tell you, he says urgently,
and the frantic set of his eyes makes my chest twist.
I just got back from lunch with him and was coming...
I'm not mad, I say quietly, interrupting him. I was, but I calmed myself down.
Carter sits down heavily in a chair.
I knew you were courting him, I remind him. And to be honest, in my own actions, I told Dave from the Vine to email you and make the contact.
His eyebrows pull close together and he swallows.
You did? When?
Like maybe your second week here, I say, shrugging. Dave assumed Dan was coming to my list. I just sent him your way instead.
He shakes his head, stunned.
You didn't have to do that.
The merge had just happened and you'd been dealt one hell of a blow.
I wanted to win, but I wanted an even playing field first. Or maybe I just underestimated what a threat you'd be. I don't know, but I'm glad you got Dan. I think you'll be a great fit. I'm not mad you didn't tell me, I promise. He seems to flounder for a few seconds and then says quietly,
I can't believe you did that.
This makes me laugh, and it surprises him because it's never a soft laugh. It's a bursting, evil laugh. Like I said, I wanted to beat you fairly. He lifts a single, teasing brow at the assumption that I would beat him at all. My pulse does a little jump, and I guess Daryl was right. I like competing with him. Who knew? And oh my God, we're talking this out. We're interacting like adults, in person. Besides, I like you, dummy. His hands come forward, finding my hips and pulling me closer so that I'm standing between his legs. Just like? Maybe more. He growls a little, leaning to kiss my stomach once through my dress, then again a little lower. How can I get you to sign with me? Keep doing that. As he kisses and apologizes again, and lets his hand slide around and to my ass, over my thighs, remembering, my fingers find his hair and I close my eyes, tilting my face to the ceiling. I don't care about this office. I don't care about this agency. I care about my clients. I care about this man.
Dan hasn't signed the contract yet, but he has given me the verbal commitment. He wants to work with me.
Carter hesitates.
He wants me more in a manager role, as well as agent. You know that legally I can't do both. Caleb wants to move back to New York. I'd have to figure out how that could work.
I nod, but he doesn't see it. My silence doesn't seem to bother him. He wraps his arms fully around me, squeezing as he presses his face to my hip. But then he seems to remember something and pulls back, looking up at me.
If you weren't mad, why did you look so panicked when I came in?
When I try to smile, it comes out a little broken, so I give up and shrug instead. I just get the feeling I'm not going to be here very much longer. He studies my face, quiet for a few seconds.
Something's going on with Brad. With you, I mean.
I laugh. You think?
No, seriously.
Carter sits back and looks past me to make sure his door is firmly closed.
I was thinking about this all weekend. Why does he have it in for you specifically?
A world of unknowns in that one question. I shrug.
Do you have something on him?
He asks me. I have a lot of little bits of dirt, I say. No steaming pile. Nothing I'd really share with anyone.
And he knows that.
He bends, rubbing his hands over his face.
It just doesn't make sense.
Because Carter is obviously the most amazing boyfriend of all time, he takes me out to breakfast for dinner. Over enormous stacks of pancakes at the Griddle Cafe, we talk about everything but work, interrupted frequently by Mike and Steph's giddy, emoji-stringed texts. We texted them a selfie of us earlier. Me, cross-eyed and cheeks puffed as Carter planted a giant smooch on my cheek. He typed the words, "Meet my girlfriend, Evil," before he hit send in the group window. I suppose that got the message across that we are doing the couple thing and no longer plotting each other's murder. We talk about our families because it feels like a real possibility that we'll meet them soon, and maybe that they'll meet each other. He talks about how he was engaged once and how he loved that girl, but not in that bone-crushing way where you would give up anything. She wanted small, and Carter wanted the stars. We talk about how maybe Steph was right, and I do always manage to find fault in the men I date. Too motivated, not motivated enough. And the relief I usually felt at putting them in the not-dateable column. That way it was them, not me. We talk about Daryl and Amelia and how much they mean to me, how I've known Daryl for most of my life, and how I love Amelia in almost the same way.
Have they seen you since Friday?
He asks proudly.
Because if they saw you walking lately.
He mimes me, stumbling bow-legged with two fingers teetering across the tabletop, and I chuck a piece of scrambled egg at him. He picks it off his plate and eats it. I might really love him.
Sorry,
he says quickly, reaching across the table to take my hand.
Did that gross you out?
What? No.
Then why do you suddenly look like you're going to vomit?
Because I love you. He laughs, delighted.
How terrible.
I just... don't go, I say in a burst.
Go where?
Anywhere. He stands, leaning across the table. His lips taste like syrup. His smile feels like home. Beneath him on the table, his phone begins to jump. Carter pulls away, grinning at me and slowly sitting down in his seat before glancing at the caller ID. With a tiny, just a sec finger, he answers.
Dave, hey.
I watch Carter's face go from flesh-colored to zombie pale in about 2 seconds.
What? No, it wasn't me. Absolutely not.
He listens, shaking his head.
Fuck, no, it... he hasn't even signed yet.
Nodding, he says,
just verbal, and the announcement was supposed to be yours just as soon as I had the paperwork wrapped up.
Finally, he looks up at me and whispers, open Variety now. Scrambling for my phone, I open my app. It loads slowly, but by the time it does, Carter has finished his call and he takes my phone when I hand it to him. I've already read the headline. I have no idea what is happening, but Carter looks like he is about to throw up his pancakes all over the table, and it isn't because I professed my love. It's because Variety has just announced that Dan Prince has signed with Carter. What is going on? I whisper. Carter shakes his head, reading and rereading what's written before handing the phone back to me with a quietly hissed, shit. I scan the article and feel my stomach drop. People's sexiest man alive leaves Lorimac. Dan Prince, actor in the upcoming action blockbuster Global, and recently voted People Magazine's sexiest man alive, has signed with talent agent Carter Aaron. Prince has emerged as one of the hottest actors in Hollywood following the box office success of Under a Stony Sky, in which Prince portrays a brooding cyborg who saves a family from a corporation bent on killing their genius children. To date, the film has earned over $750 million internationally. Prince previously was repped by Joel Meyer over at Lorimac, who launched Prince's career in his debut, Edge, produced by Universal and directed by George Stan. Lorimac has been in talks with Sony and Fox to cast Prince in several upcoming big-budget films, but according to Prince's spokesperson, those will pass over to Carter Aaron, effective immediately. Aaron, originally from New York, works for newly merged Price and Dickel. I stare at the screen, uncomprehending. Why is this in Variety? It's a stupid first question, but I get now why Dave called. Dave was supposed to get this scoop. Dave was going to give Carter a huge spread in the Hollywood Vine print edition in exchange.
No idea.
His voice is clipped and loud. Carter pulls out his wallet, hastily grabbing a couple of 20s and dropping them on the table. His hands are shaking. I scramble to follow him as he stands and heads for the door. A few diners near us have stopped talking to watch us bolt. Why? I have so many questions. Why is this out now? Why did Variety get the scoop? And why is Carter mentioned so obviously? It doesn't seem like that's what's happening, but Carter wouldn't do this, right? He knows better. He has to know better. This is Agenting 101. Lorimac knew? I ask. Carter bursts from the restaurant.
No, I don't think so. I mean, Dan couldn't hire me until he'd fired Joel, but that happened last week, and I got the distinct impression Joel was keeping it from Lorimac, positive Dan would come back. I don't like Joel, but this is no way for them to find out. Fuck!
He does an angry little fist punch toward the sky.
Fuck!
Actors leaving agencies is a big deal, a huge deal, especially talent like Dan. He'll take millions of dollars with him, and it will not only affect the agency's bottom line, it will bruise their reputation.
This announcement is bad for Lorimac, yes, but it could be just as bad for P&D because it makes us look like shady assholes doing underhanded things to steal talent. None of this should have been made public until we were sure Lorimac knew and had time to prepare their own statement. More to the point, it makes Carter look like a shady asshole because he's mentioned specifically, with very little mention of P&D at all. It's written as if Carter is the force behind the deal, not the agency. Tripping after him, I start to form another question. Carter, why? He wheels on me, face red.
I don't fucking know, Evie, okay? I don't fucking know.
I pull back, hands to my chest. Okay, Jesus. Deflating, he hangs his head, reaching for me, pulling me to his chest. I'm still stunned and come a little reluctantly. I'm sorry, he whispers, kissing my hair. I'm sorry, I don't know. I don't fucking know what just happened. I told Dave he had the exclusive. I met Dan today and we shook on it. I even told him about the offer of announcing with Dave and the Vine. He was thrilled. But he hasn't seen a contract. I've never spoken to Ted Statsky at Variety. I have no idea how he got this. Taking his hand, I pull him toward my car. Let's go to the office and figure this out. It's nearly 8 by the time we get to the 5th floor, but all the lights are on and I can hear Brad's voice barking from his office all the way down by the elevator bank. Carter blanches, glancing at me before heading straight down there. I follow, and although I'm only a few steps behind him, I stay in the hall. I have no role in this crisis but to be Carter's support and his colleague, making whatever damage control calls he needs. Brad's voice is a terrifying thunder.
What the fuck is this, Aaron? What the fuck is going on? Have you seen this fucking Variety article?
I spoke to Dave, Carter says, managing to sound calm.
This wasn't me. This wasn't us. This was an outside leak. The fuck it was?
Brad yells.
You pissed all over this article. You wrote your fucking name in loopy fucking letters all over this love note to Variety. P&D is barely fucking mentioned here. Do you work here? Are you in my department?
Of course, Brad.
Well, not according to this, you're not. We get a line at the bottom. No one fucking reads the last line.
Carter wisely doesn't point out that everyone at Lorimac will read the last line.
I'm supposed to meet my wife tonight at an event where she's getting an award, Brad yells. But instead, I'm here trying to make sense of this fuck-up. Jesus, Carter, this is a huge shitstorm.
I know I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't. But I step in, feeling my heart grow into a solid ball of pissed off. It wasn't Carter, Brad. I've been with him since he came back from his lunch with Dan.
Lunch with Dan?
Brad says, turning back to Carter.
So he did sign?
Legal is still writing up the contracts, Carter says, trying to calm Brad down. Brad, it's Tuesday. He confirmed over the phone 3 days ago. He did a verbal and a handshake today. I know better than to run to Variety or anyone with a handshake. Carter's voice trails off because Brad isn't listening to him anymore. He's staring at me, and with a cold rush down my body, I realize why. My heart, my lungs, my stomach are packed into a tight ball of fury.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I ask, struggling to stay calm.
I told you this today, he says through gritted teeth. I told you about Dan Prince today, Abby. And this is what you do? You're so jealous, you gotta go screw Dave, Dan, Carter, and P&D in one blow.
Carter takes a step back like he's been punched. I am shaking. At my side, my hand forms a fist, and I have to consciously unclench it or else I know it will be flying toward Brad.
Brad, there is no way, Carter starts.
You need to take a deep breath, Brad. I interrupt, anger making my voice nearly inaudible. It wasn't Carter, and it wasn't me. He lifts his chin in a fuck you gesture and scoffs.
This is low,